So continuing, while I'm here in India, I'll be continuing with the second canto from where I left off. I hope you'll enjoy hearing second canto Bhagavatam. The section that I've gotten up to is chapter 6, Prushasukta confirmed. And we're near the end of the chapter. And do you know what Prushasukta mantra is? What is it?
Prayers to the Lord.
A little bit more than that? What else can you say about Prushasukta? Prayers to Lord. What else? Anyone? That was the right answer. Not wrong. Just more.
Just during the time when Lord Vishnu was in the womb, that time when he was.
Yeah, it's before the demigods went to the shore of the milk ocean and they offered the Prushasukta prayers to the Lord to make his appearance. Prushasukta prayers. Okay. Purusha avatars have to do with material creation, right? There's six categories of avatars, and one of those six categories is the Purusha avatars. Purusha avatars are three in number. Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, Shirdakshaya Vishnu. So the Purusha Sukta prayers, Sukta means prayers. So it's redundant. Prushasukta prayers. They're prayers to those Purusha avatars. And it comes from the Rig Veda. And they are describing the process of creation. In the beginning of the Prushasukta prayers, it makes it very clear that the source of the cosmic manifestation is beyond the cosmic manifestation in the Vaikuntha realm. So an expansion of the Vishnu forms, the Purusha avatar forms of the Lord, are expanded from the Vaikuntha realm. They take their service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, for the purpose of material creation. And it describes the stages of unfolding of the material creation, including the Varnashram system and the divisions of mankind and species of life. And, Sarga and Visarga are both described. The function of the Vishnus and then that of Brahma. Sarga and Visarga. The Srimad Bhagavatam is making commentary on the Prushasukta mantras from the Rig Veda. Nice. Because some persons may not understand it, so it's explained. And so the chapter is called Prushasukta Confirmed. And the medium of Puranic literature is in the form of historical events. So there was a historical event where Narada asked some questions of Brahma. Brahma supplied the answers. And he's just expanding the meaning of the Prushasukta mantras. Very nice. And so the Bhagavatam's relationship with the Vedas, Rig Veda in particular, in this case, is explaining the meaning. That's what Smriti is. It explains the meaning of Shruti. The Bhagavatam is a commentary on Vedanta Sutra. The Bhagavatam is a commentary on Gayatri Mantra, also comes from Rig Veda. This chapter is a commentary on Purusha Sukta, prayers from the Rig Veda. So that's background. Now, chapter 6, I've gotten through Brahma's answers to Narada's questions. He's answered them twice. He answered them once, and he went back and re-answered them. And now he's at the point of saying, I've answered your questions. And the answers that I've spoken are infallible because the Supreme Lord is the master of my senses and mind, and I'm just his puppet. So whatever I'm saying, he's saying. Whatever I'm saying is infallible because he's infallible, and I'm just fully surrendered unto him. So that's the section for this morning. We'll cover two verses. Text 33 and 34. This is chapter 6, canto 2, text 33-34. Brahma is speaking to Narada. Brahma says, my dear son, whatever you inquired from me, I have thus explained to you. And you must know for certain that whatever there is, either cause or as effect, both in the material and the spiritual worlds, is dependent on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's language in Purusha Sukta prayers as well as in the Bhagavatam that speak of the spiritual realm as the three-quarters portion, the material realm as the one-quarter portion. We've heard that before, and that's where it comes from. It comes from Purusha Sukta and the Bhagavatam. Now the Lord is saying, Brahma is saying, even in the spiritual world, whatever exists is an expansion of the Lord's potencies. Whatever exists in the material world is an expansion of the Lord's potencies. So, everything that exists is an effect of the original cause. Then he's saying, in turn, those effects then become the causes of other things. But their dependent causes dependent upon the original cause. Technology is nothing other than the study of causes and effects. He's now saying not only technology, but reality, spiritual and material reality, is nothing but a series of causes and effects. And the original cause is the personality of Godhead. Because that was one of the questions that Narada is asking. But now he's like packaging the whole thing. Both the spiritual and the material realm are dependent effects and in turn causes of other things. You got it, right? So while we can see this is the cause of that, with the knowledge of the Bhagavatam we can understand that's very nice. This, which is the cause of that, this is the effect of something else. Its ability to cause something else is derived from a higher source. Prabhupada's purport. The complete cosmic situation, both in the material and in the spiritual manifestations of the energies of the Lord. The complete cosmic situation is working and moving. First, as the cause and then as the effect. But the original cause is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's like the overall message of Purusha Sukta. And then further causes and effects and causes and effects. Effects of the original cause become the causes of other effects. And thus everything, either permanent or temporary, is working as cause and effect. That may sound a little contradictory. How is it that something that's permanent can be either an effect, or how can it be an effect? Or it's easy, it can be a cause. It's an effect in the sense that it is the energy of the energetic. It's like living beings are eternal. And the living beings, by involvement with matter, activate matter. So it's an effect. So it's eternal and it's a cause, but we can also say the living entities are emanations from the Supreme. And so, in a spiritual sense, it's an effect, the energy of the energetic. And because the Lord is the primeval cause of all persons and all energies, He is called the cause of all causes. Now, quiz question. The Prabhupada quotes both Brahma Samhita and Bhagavad Gita to confirm that Krishna is the cause of all causes. What's the Brahma Samhita verse? Then what's the Bhagavad Gita verse? Brahma Samhita. Krishna is the cause of all causes. It's the first verse. Sarva Karana Karana. He's the cause of all causes. Okay? And Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is the cause of all causes. Doesn't directly say cause of all causes, but... Okay. That means he's the cause of the material energy. He oversees the material energy. What about everything spiritual and material emanates from Krishna? The first of the Chaturshloki verses. Which is? Yeah? So it's in the first two lines. Aham sarvasya prabhava. Prabhava means generate. I'm the emanating source of everything. And sarvasya, our acharya's comment, this means matter and spirit. That's everything. Aham sarvasya prabhava. And then he says it again. Matak sarvam pravartate. Everything rests upon me. Everything emanates from me. I'm the source of everything. I'm the source of everything. Everything comes from me. Just say it this way, say it this way. So the original primeval cause is Vigraha, the personal. And the impersonal, the spiritual effulgence, Brahmajyoti, is also an effect of the Supreme Brahman. And where is that stated in Bhagavad Gita? 427 Bhagavad Gita says, I'm the basis of the impersonal Brahman. What's the Sanskrit? I'm the basis of the impersonal Brahman. Pratishta. Basis. Brahmanohi pratishta aham. So aham is first person singular. It's personal. I am the pratishta. of Brahman. I am the basis and support of Brahman. So the personal is the basis and support of the impersonal. And that personal is Satchitananda Vigraha, Brahma Samhita. Okay, that's the that verse just sums up everything that's in the chapter in one verse. Because he's described details of the causes and effects that become then causes of other effects that then become causes of other effects. So Krishna is the ultimate support and he's personal. And that's that truth applies to the spiritual and the material realms. Then, O Narada, because I have caught hold of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, with great zeal, and in this chapter, the different words for with great enthusiasm, with great zeal, with great effort, not like complacency, but with enthusiasm. Whatever I say has never proved to have been false, nor is the progress of my mind ever deterred, nor are my senses ever deranged by temporary attachment to matter. In the Sanskrit word for word, utkantyavata, utkantyavata, by great earnestness, by great earnestness. So this, I'm highlighting this because it's very important. The qualification of Brahma's disclosing what his qualification is. His qualification is, I have taken hold of the lotus feet of the Personality of Godhead with great earnestness. So, whether in the sadhana, bhava, or prema stages of devotional service, a eagerness, a very sincere effort is required. It's not that I want to point this out. It's not, the devotional service is not a mechanical process. It's a devotional process. And so with devotion, there has to be, for its full effect, there has to be a very strong sense of purpose, a clear sense of goal, and a strong sense of purpose to achieve that goal. The lotus feet of Krishna are available everywhere. The Krishna is situated in the heart of every living being. So he's very accessible. And it's not by mechanical means that he can be accessed. It's by strong effort. And then the Lord chooses to give his mercy to that devotee. Then the point that he's making in the verse that Prabhupada's going to explain more in the purport is that the result of this is that the earnest effort of achieving the lotus feet of the Lord is the Lord gives his protection. He protects the mind and senses, and he protects the purpose of the devotee. And one can't achieve spiritual elevation without control of the mind and senses. And to try to control the mind and the senses by mechanical means, well, it's very difficult, to put it mildly. It's not possible, to put it more honestly. It's not possible, just on our own effort, to control the mind and senses. But when the mind and senses are brought to the lotus feet of the Lord by his all-attractiveness and his special mercy, the mind and senses are made infallible. That's what Brahma is saying. My words are not fallible because the Lord protects my words. He protects my senses, including the power of speech. He protects them. And that's the main message. Prabhupada writes, Lord Brahma is the original speaker of Vedic wisdom to Narada. And Narada is the distributor of transcendental knowledge all over the world through his various disciples like Vyasa and others. The followers of Vedic wisdom accept the statements of Brahmaji as gospel truth. And transcendental knowledge is thus distributed all over the world by the process of disciplic succession from time immemorial since the beginning of creation. So what we're doing is very ancient. The application is modern, the principle is ancient. Here, faithfully vibrate precisely according to that message that we've heard faithfully. Lord Brahma is the perfect liberated being within the material world, and any sincere student of transcendental knowledge must accept the words and statements of Brahmaji as infallible. So that's the second time you said the same thing. The words are gospel truth. They must be accepted as infallible. Now there's this argument that seems reasonable. How can we accept an intermediary between ourselves and God? Because after all, man is fallible. And it's true, man is fallible. But the instruments or the representatives of the Supreme Lord, because he's infallible, they become infallible. And to say the Supreme Lord can't have infallible instruments, that's limiting God. That's not so. So the person isn't particularly apart from the person, separated from the personality of Godhead. Any individual is fallible. Connected to the personality of Godhead, that makes this disciplic succession, starting from Brahma and downwards, infallible, provided the receiver, as in the case of Brahma, has this aukantyavata, great eagerness in capturing the Lord's lotus feet. The next sentence, Prabhupada says the same thing. Whatever Brahma speaks is perfect to the letter. So far it's three times. And this is because Brahma is a great devotee of the Lord who has earnestly, with great enthusiasm, with great zeal, with great sincerity, earnestly accepted the lotus feet of the Lord as the supreme truth. That's a very reasonable and logical extension. The Lord is infallible and his message is infallible. One who has earnestly accepted his lotus feet, they're infallible and their message is infallible. Then he gives an example. In the Brahma Samhita, which was compiled by Brahmaji, he repeats the aphorism, Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. I am a worshipper of the original person, personality of God, and Govinda, the primeval Lord. Then he says it now for the fourth time. So whatever he says, whatever he thinks, and whatever he does, normally, in his mood, are to be accepted as truth because of his direct and very intimate connection with Govinda, the primeval Lord. Now from, that's Brahma. Now at the Lord's side, Sri Govinda, who pleasingly accepts the loving transcendental service of his devotees, gives all protection to the words and actions of his devotees. What's the verse in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says he gives protection to his devotees? Kunteya pratijanihi nami bhagata pranashati. O son of Kunti, please declare it. Question. The Lord asks Arjuna to declare. And why? Because, well, there's different whys. What's the one that we've heard so many times? Why does Krishna ask Arjuna to declare?
Because to protect the devotee's promise, he breaks his own promise.
Yeah. Yeah, we can't trust Krishna. He may say something and do something else. If his devotee comes, you know, in the foreground. But a devotee, but the devotee says Krishna will uphold that. So here's the explanation here, slightly different, but close. Because sometimes the declaration of Govinda himself may seem contradictory to mundane creatures, but the mundaner will never find any contradiction in the words of the Lord's devotees. The devotees are especially protected by the Lord so that they remain infallible, which is this other idea. Of course, it's the Lord's infallible potency that makes the devotee also infallible. Therefore, the process of devotional service always begins in the service of the devotee, who appears in disciplic succession. Now, we know that statement to be true, and now the Bhagavatam is explaining why it is that it's true. We don't have the qualification to approach the Lord directly. Although he exists and he's everywhere present. So, knowing that, the Lord makes himself accessible through his devotee, who is readily accessible. The problem is then seeing the devotee in a mundane way and therefore not getting access to the Lord. So, four times already, in one purport so far, Prabhupada has emphasized, one must accept the representative, Brahmaji, as absolute, infallible, whatever he speaks, to the letter. And why should we do so? Once again, because of that attachment to the personality of Godhead. With great earnestness, having grasped the lotus feet of the Lord, and the Lord's reciprocation that he then makes the devotee, his words, his thoughts, his actions infallible. The whole process is very much dependent upon faith in the Lord. That he has this affinity for his devotees. And he does these things. Because he does these things, the devotee then is the conduit for the mercy of the Lord and the truth of the Lord and realization of the Lord and service of the Lord, and because he empowers that devotee in that way. So we have faith in the devotee because faith in the Lord. We have faith in the process of the Lord purifying us, and therefore we have to have faith in the Lord having purified others. Otherwise, we don't have faith. And without faith, we won't get the full effect of the purifying process. The faith should be based in Scripture, not just blind. And so we're getting the scriptural explanation and reference. The Lord is a person eternally, and the devotee of the Lord is also a person eternally. Because the devotee has his sense organs, even at the liberated stage, like Brahma said, my mind doesn't get deterred, my senses are not corrupted. Even in the liberated state, there's mind and senses. He is therefore a person always. And because the devotee's service is accepted by the Lord in full reciprocation, the devotee's service is accepted by the Lord in full reciprocation. So, full reciprocation is he fully spiritualizes that effort that they're making with their mind and senses and articles of this world. The reciprocation is the whole process becomes sanctified, spiritualized. Therefore, the devotees never go astray under the attraction of material enjoyment. So that the mood of service protects one from the corruption of the mood of enjoyment. It's the antidote. Same senses, same object in the mood of enjoyment, and one becomes bewildered and captured by Maya. The antidote to that mood of independent enjoyment from the Lord is the mood of service to the Lord. The plans of the devotee never go in vain. And this is all due to the faithful attachment of the devotee for the service of the Lord. This is the standard of perfection and liberation. Anyone beginning from Brahmaji down to the human being is at once put on the path of liberation simply by his attachment in great eagerness for the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna, the primeval person. The Lord affirms this in the Bhagavad Gita 14:26. Mam chayo yabhicharina bhakti yogena sevate Sagadam samati chaitan brahmapuyaya kalpate. Anyone, therefore, who is earnestly serious, there's this word earnestly in the fourth time in the purport. Earnestly, serious in heart and soul about being in intimate touch with the personality of Godhead in the relationship of transcendental loving service, will always be infallible in words and action. One more time, the reason is that the Supreme Lord is absolute truth, and anything earnestly, there's the word for the fifth time, dovetailed with the absolute truth, attains the same transcendental quality. Now, what if one doesn't have that earnest, sincere effort to serve the Lord? But one wants to know about him. any amount of mental speculation on the strength of material science and knowledge without any bona fide touch with the absolute truth is sure to be a mundane untruth and a failure, simply due to not being in touch with the absolute truth. Such godless, unfaithful words and actions, however materially enriched, are never to be trusted. That is the purport of this important verse. A grain of devotion is more valuable than tons of faithlessness. There's a nice statement. A grain of devotion is more valuable than tons of faithlessness. So we may not be on the level of Lord Brahma and Narada and Vyas and so on. But whenever faithfulness to that principle, which, by the way, it grows, but whenever even just a little particle of adherence to the way, the genuine way of devotion to the personality of Godhead, it gives us access to devotional service, and through the medium of devotional service, capacity to understand in truth the mysteries of Krishna and the message of the scriptures. Classic example of that is the Lord Chaitanya's tour of South India and in Sri Rangam, meeting the Brahmana that was illiterate. He couldn't pronounce the words properly, and so others were laughing at him because of his incompetency. But Lord Chaitanya appreciated him as the real scholar of Bhagavad Gita because he understood the essence of the message of Bhagavad Gita. The kindness that Krishna was extending to Arjuna to become his chariot driver. Although he's the personality of Godhead. And just that simple gesture was inducing the man to cry in great appreciation for Krishna's kindness. So Krishna becomes the chariot driver of Arjuna. Krishna likewise becomes the one who helps his devotee in any circumstance. That's the principle of Bhagavad Gita, the principle of the potency or effectiveness of devotional service. We're not, fortunately, just dependent upon our good merits. We're dependent upon Krishna. So that's what Brahma is saying to Narada. Whatever I have said is infallible, and mind and senses do not, cannot be corrupted or deterred because of that faithfulness to Krishna and Krishna's extending his protection. And the lesson for us is we need to have that faith in the infallibility of Brahma. Now, just go down very carefully down the path of what some devotees brought to Prabhupada's attention about Brahma's stealing the calves and the cowherd boys. Prabhupada, Brahma's his perfect being, then how could he do this? And Prabhupada would become angry. He is perfect enough, was his answer. So, what we need to look at in the standard of perfection is how Krishna looks at the standard of perfection. Bhajate mama nanyabhak is the standard of perfection. Ananya bhak, undivided devotion. And if there appears to be some discrepancy, or if there is some discrepancy, Krishna immediately corrects that situation, because that's how he protects his devotee. One should understand like that. And so then that, with that understanding, one understands, one has captured the fact that Krishna is specially kind and protective unto his devotee, and part two of the devotee's condition is as Brahma described it. Even the mistake, apparent mistake of stealing the calves of the cowherd boys. Now, Gopi Pranadana, our Sanskrit scholar, went to BBT, spent some years, part of his Sanskrit training was at Columbia University, but he also spent some years at Udupi. I don't know if you're aware of that. Trouble staying awake. You'll visit, once a year, and he stayed there for some time, studied Sanskrit with the Udupi scholars. And one of the things that he shared with me is he noted that Madhvacharya made no comment on the Brahmavimohan Lila, because Madhvacharya is, Brahma is the greatest. He's the original preceptor in their deceptive succession. Brahma is the greatest. He made no commentary on that Lila. He's the greatest. To think, well, Brahma is less than perfect. A, that thinking itself is offensive. B, it weakens the thought, weakens the whole fabric of deceptive succession. And perhaps most importantly, this explanation that Krishna gives protection to his devotees, even in the case of Durachar. So Durachar. Even in that case, Krishna personally steps in. So in normal circumstances, there's no Durachar. It's Sadachar. If there is something, Krishna steps in. Krishna upholds the devotee's position. This must be understood. And that's what Brahma is saying. There's no infallibility, no corruptibility, no deviation of the mind, no movement at all from the position of devotional service. Okay, you are all having some of you are having difficulty staying awake. So I'm going to see if you can stay awake by asking if you have any questions. It's pretty basic Krishna consciousness, but second canto of Bhagavatam is expanding on this understanding. You have something? Go ahead.
I think it has been like
blessedness, and then the instruction comes to this, it's like impossible, like, it's supposed to have something with great instruction that will be done, like, but our guidance is required. And then the great, so many kind of distraction comes, how to understand?
When distractions come, how do we understand? That's your question? Well, distractions come because either our determination is weak, or it's just the nature of this place. It's the, as Bhishma Dev describes in the ninth chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, it's the influence of time. The time energy acts on everyone, even the perfected souls. So we're not in the category yet of perfected souls. So in our case, then it's our weakness of determination. Something comes along and our attention goes somewhere else because our determination is weak. But there may, in the case even of perfected souls, something may come that may act like a distraction. Just the mind doesn't go anywhere. It's just, it's the time energy, moving matter, and we stay fixed. And it's especially the case in Kali Yuga. And as Kali Yuga progresses, it gets more distracting. And so the number of devotees diminishes. You know, so here we have the age of Kali, where there's lots of, the numbers of devotees that are practicing is diminishing, but also the quality of that devotion is also diminishing. The quality of devotion has been reduced in large part to exercise of rituals, where there is still devotion, you know, Vaishnava practices going on. So what we need to do, what you and I and each of us need to do, is go more deeply into the real spirit of devotion, which is what this verse is saying, the earnestness of seeking the purpose of devotion, the rituals or the activities. Because otherwise, it's waves and waves and waves of opposition, and as you put it, distractions. You have to be very sincere in purpose and stay attached and strongly connected to that purpose. And then things can come and things can go. Purpose remains fixed. It's a challenge. I said service mood. Yeah.
So how does taste keep on increasing? Is it by experiencing the mind
release? Is it by what?
How the taste for the service?
Taste comes through the mercy of Krishna and our continued efforts. So that means our continued efforts means further purification. There's two things, effort and mercy. As our efforts continue, there's more purification. And when there's more purification, we're able to taste beyond, you know, the material experience, the sensual experience of the world. We can experience something more deep when there's purification. And also, what these two verses are describing is Krishna shows special mercy upon such persons. He attracts them purposefully and protects them purposefully. And so he makes arrangements for taste. He gives himself liberally to the sincere devotee. That's taste. But when you look at the spectrum of the stages of devotion, ruchi comes after anarthas are pretty much gone. After the nishtha stage comes ruchi stage. That's taste. Any taste before that is just encouragement, basically. Krishna encourages. They're not eligible. But he encourages anyways. Rupa Goswami calls that bhakti avas, where describes in nectar devotion, one gets in the earlier stages of devotional service, one gets like the cloud of illusion is lifted a bit, and one gets a glimpse of something, and we call that a realization, and then it becomes, you know, covered again. That's Krishna's just encouraging. And even that encouragement is just a reflection of the real thing. The real thing is unbroken, steady, with clear consciousness, and Krishna's in full control, and we're just serving him. You know, we're just going along with his program of devotional service. That's when there's real taste. And from that a taste, then attachment, then ecstasy, and then love of God. So whatever taste may come in our stage is encouragement. It's confirmation that we're headed in the right direction. That's, you know, we are becoming purified. We should know that whatever it is that we're experiencing, taste, is such a diminished state of what real taste is. An example Prabhupada gives is trying to taste food with a tongue that has cotton wrapped around the tongue. Now something may get through the cotton, but it's not like take the cotton off. But we're attached to that experience of, you know, through the medium of our material designations to experience what devotional service is. Such is our conditioning. Just a reflection, a very dim hint of what real taste is. But it's encouraging. It's, you know, it's definitely different than no taste or just dry mechanical stuff. Something? Well, you just answered your own question within the frame of the question itself. In the very first part, normally we can't control our mind and senses, but we can when it's possible when. So we don't meet that, if we're not meeting that criterion, then the mind and senses are wandering. It's an indication that when the mind and senses are wandering, it's an indication that our purpose is not so strong. It's not the fault of the process. It's not the fault of Krishna. Our purpose is not so strong. So we experience what that's like, and it's not so relishable. So when we're feeling like that, boy, I feel yucky, then we start to get a little serious. We get a little serious, we get a little taste. Ah, now I'm enjoying. You know, it's not for us, the purpose is not so that we're enjoying. The purpose is so that we can serve, so that Krishna's enjoying. You know, we just keep messing up all the time, pretty consistently. Because the enjoying tendency is so strong. So, similar to the other question, when real spirit of serving, humble service, starts as much as that enters into our hearts, the enjoying spirit antidote has been applied. And then we can start to get the experience of the real thing, the experience of Krishna's protection, and so forth. The hand of Krishna, the reciprocation of Krishna, the relationship with Krishna, becomes palpably experienced. It's very nice. There's nothing like it. But then we go through this, you know, complacency and doership mentality and, you know, all the conditioning things. You've been at it for a long time. So the habits run deep. So we're trying to build another habit, the devotional life. And once it's in place, in this nishtha position, practically it just keeps going. I mean, there's effort still required, but it keeps going. We're not so qualified, right? And you're referring to that?
One point in that, like, scientists also study this cause and effect through the technical things and all.
Sure, they do.
So they do also come to the conclusion, must be coming, that there's something beyond their control and all.
Well, mostly they deny it. Mostly they deny it. And they use their science as proof that there's nothing beyond it. Now that's silly, because they can't prove there's nothing beyond it.
So, like, I was coming to the same thing. That means, like, it is just hypocrisy which on which they are.
Yes. 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 It's bluffing. But, you know, the nature of the material energy is such that they like to declare, look, we can explain everything. We don't need this crutch of referring to something that we can't see, don't know, and can't verify. You don't need that crutch. We can explain everything. That's like this guy that, you know, the Myth of God, the Oxford scholar that's got this best-selling book out these days, The Myth of God. He's, you know, he's a heavy-duty guy. He uses his intellect to present words in a very formidable way that says, you know, atheism. And he's, you know, he's got a lot of people listening to him. So he's not coming to the conclusion that, yeah, there must be something beyond this. just the opposite. So what's behind the theist or the atheist is their attitude towards God. And then they're using the tools that God has given them for destroying God or recognizing Him, disclosing Him to others. And this is going, not a new thing. Since time began, it's been going on. Suras and the Asuras, the divine and demoniac natures. Something more? No? Okay. Srila Prabhupada, can you tell us?